Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello and welcome to the show that is absolutely not above hiring another show to make it look good. On today's Totally Football League Show, is time running out for is time running out for the Sheffield Wednesday manager? We sent Matt Stanger back to the mothership. He was at Ewood Park on Saturday, and somehow Blackburn Rovers still won. And there was a big win for Crewe Alexandra this weekend, which is handy because they don't win many. We take a look at what's going on at Gresty Road. And in a brutal assertion of hegemonic strength, we've urinated on the legs of the Not the Top 20 podcast and claimed its creative driving forces for our own. The doors are sealed. They cannot get out. We'll have all the usual stuff, the anthemic roundup music, the fan league, the odds from Footy Joe. It's all here on the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill. It's Ali and George from the Not the Top 20 podcast. Ali, how you doing?
Very, very well, thanks, Ian. Happy to be here.
Very delighted that you're here. The door really is locked, by the way. You can't get out. George, welcome aboard.
Hi, Ian. Thanks very much. It's very professional in here.
Is it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. God. We used to kitchen tables and the like, so to God. Be in a studios.
That's absolutely the first time anyone's ever accused us of being professional. we were actually in the same room not so long ago, weren't we, with the FSF Awards.
A very large room.
Yes.
There were crickets at one point, I think, when everyone realised the winner of the award that we were up for, we wondered what was going to happen next, but it all went very well, I think.
Well, you know what? They're just trinkets, Ali. They're just trinkets.
Exactly.
It's art. You can't quantify art. Matt, can't quantify you. We missed you last week. Are you all right now?
Yeah, it's great to be back. Thanks for begging me back on the show.
Begging, contractually obliged. I don't know. It depends which way you go down. You were at Blackburn, weren't you? You went home.
I did. I went home at the weekend, had some delicious plate meat pie at Ewood Park, and it felt wonderful. Trip down memory lane.
Yeah. Is it nice going back? Like, even in a professional capacity, do you still get surges of nostalgia?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, definitely. And you catch up with old friends and people you used to sit with at the games all those years ago. It was all going swimmingly until that second half, really. And then I thought we were going to throw it away, but yeah, it was great.
Ewood Park, by the way, the only ground I've ever had a death threat from a 6-year-old.
Wow.
Yeah, walked over to the side of the press box, leaned over, and told me quite explicitly that he was going to get a gun and shoot me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Happens in Blackburn.
Yeah. They grow up tough and they grow up mean. Should we get cracking on the Championship Roundup? Because we've got a very busy show. Anthemic music, go. Wolverhampton Wanderers opened up the weekend on Friday night with a routine 1-0 victory away at Sheffield Wednesday. Ruben Neves with a winning goal like a length of the pool table shot in the black. But was that the result of the weekend? Was it Bobbins? Sunderland have finally won a home game, bless them. 1-0 victors over serially inconsistent Fulham. And Leeds United are inching their way back towards the playoffs. They just about overcame Norwich 1-0 at Elland Road.
Jack Robinson grabbed the first goals of his career to earn QPR a rare win on the road at Birmingham, while Bolton slipped to a third defeat in four matches at home to fellow strugglers Burton. And draw specialist Brentford failed to score for only the second time in 17 matches as Barnsley picked up their first point in six at Griffin Park.
Oh, Sheffield United, what's happened? They were beaten 1-0 by Preston North End. It's five games without a win now for Chris Wilder's men, and they are sliding all the way out of contention. And if they're in trouble, what do we make of Middlesbrough? Another defeat for Gary Monk. As someone in this room predicted, they went down 2-1 at Millwall. And Ipswich are weirdly still in contention for a playoff place. They beat Reading 2-0 at Portman Road and they are eighth.
Bristol City warmed up for their EFL Cup quarter-final against Manchester United with a fourth win on the spin at home to Nottingham Forest. While Derby are also challenging for a place in the top two. It's now 9 wins in 12 for Rowett's rampant Rams after they beat Stirling Aston Villa 2-0. And it's 3 wins in 4 for Ipswich as they saw Reading 2-0 to climb within 2 points of the playoffs.
Right, big week for the Championship, but we're going to focus all our attention on Sheffield Wednesday.
I was actually very busy before the show. I was doing a very long interview with the guy from Gimlet about Italia 90. So I said to producer Ben, can you prepare just a few discussion points for Sheffield Wednesday? And he's got Jermaine Jackson from the Jackson 5 said that he'd taken an interest in Sheffield Wednesday, who was in the Big Brother house at the time. So I think that's all we need. Let's move on to League One, and here's the round. Sheffield Wednesday, towards the end of last season, I saw them against Newcastle and they were brilliant. Played Rafa Benitez's side off the park. And you looked at them and you thought, if not this season, next season. Surely to God. They weren't that far away. They're in the playoff final and kind of unfairly beaten by Hull. So they were absolutely one of my predictions to go up. Ali, it really hasn't happened like that, has it?
It hasn't. And I think that's, under Carvajal, the sort of game that they've always been fine in, big games against teams like Newcastle, where their style of play has suited the occasion. But they've never developed a way of putting lesser teams away. I say lesser, meaning the teams below them, bottom half teams that you'd expect them to be defeating. This season, it's been going the other way entirely. They've picked up so many draws. They've actually lost fewer games than Sheffield United, but they're, what, you know, 9.9 places below them in the league. So they've just never developed, despite a strong squad on paper, a way of playing, a way of attacking, really, because the defence has always been fine, a way of attacking that puts them at the top end of the Championship, basically.
George, what's changed? I mean, Forestieri's injured, but is that it?
It's massive. I think he's one of the standout players in the league when he's fit, and I think that they're very one-dimensional without him. If you look at the midfield, you've got Bannon and Jones, who are tidy players who with Premier League experience, but they're not particularly creative. Butterfield as well isn't really someone who creates many chances, and the strikers they've got are all fairly similar. They're fox in the box types, the likes of Hooper, the likes of Winnell, Rhodes. These are all guys who's they play one way, and that's to get near the box. There's some interesting shot data as well. Sheffield Wednesday average 18th for shots taken in a game in the Championship, and top that stat for shots inside the 6-yard box, and only second behind Wolves for goals inside the 6-yard box. And I think that just shows how they're very easy to defend against. The plan is to get the ball wide to the wingers and to get the ball into the box to these strikers who come alive in the box. And they have very few players like Forestieri who can play between the lines, who can convert the midfield into attack from deeper positions. So I think they've become almost a team that people want to play when they're struggling. If you look at the teams who have picked up points against them recently, Hull, who are obviously struggling hugely, went to Hillsborough and got a 2-2 draw. Norwich picked up that massive home win 3-1. And I think you look at their next game, which is Middlesbrough at home, and Borough will look at that game as an opportunity to get back on the right track. And to be in that position, to be that team, isn't a good thing for any club in that, you know, where people are looking forward to playing you.
And Matt, the pressure's beginning to tell on the manager. You know, he had to watch Friday night's game from the stands because of a touchline ban. He's lost his rag in a couple of press conferences now, in particular doing something with a £20 note, which was very, very weird. Can he turn this around?
Well, I think it's going to be a struggle, isn't it? Because I think a lot of fans now are you know, looking for him to leave. And when you start showing everyone that you are struggling, you're feeling the pressure, then how do you really grapple it back from that situation? And like you say, he's lost it a couple of times in press conferences. There have been decisions that have gone against him. George said Hull picked up that point at Hillsborough the other week, and Michael Dawson knew there was a blatant handball that should have been a penalty for Sheffield Wednesday, and you sympathise with Carvajal a little bit over incidents like that. But I think he's they couldn't get more mid-table-y right now. They're 10 points off the playoffs, 10 points off the bottom three, and the season's threatening to peter out already.
I mean, this is the thing. They did have chances against Wolves on Friday, in particular that Adam Reach shot, which was just an awful, awful miss. So, I mean, is there an argument that there's a bit of bad luck here? You think it's more than that, don't you, Ali?
I do, personally. I think what I touched on earlier, games like that against Wolves, that teams at the top, they tend to acquit themselves fairly well in terms of performance, in terms of quashing the threat of the opposition. But I always look back at the playoffs last season when they drew Huddersfield in the semi-finals, and the way that they approached those games against a team that they should have been the match of, in such a defensive way, and in a way that showed, I mean, you've got to be pragmatic as a manager, we know that, but I do think Carvajal's taken it too far on occasions, and I would have been really disappointed to have gone out of the playoffs like that as a Sheffield Wednesday fan. I also think they're not really considered to be big spenders, and we know the teams that are always, you know, whenever Wolves or Villa are doing well, all the other Championship teams say, well, look at all the money that you're spending on players. But Carvajal has spent around £35 million on players in three seasons, and even worse, he's basically never received a fee. He's never sold anyone for any money. I think that's a really damning indictment of a modern manager. We know you've got to balance the books, and he's lucky to have a very, very kind chairman, Mr. Chanziri, who's given him a longer leash than most chairmen would.
George, if they were to get rid of him and bring someone in, who would be at the top of the shortlist?
It's hard to say. I think there's a lot of young managerial talent. I think you're looking at Paul Hurst as someone who I think deserves a big job in the Championship. I think even though Shrewsbury look like they're probably not going to keep up that form, what he's done there and what he did at Grimsby before is a sign of a manager who can turn around fortunes of a club very, very quickly. And he'd be someone I'm looking at. Alan Nixon, who's a journalist on Twitter, who all EFL fans should follow. He's a locked account, but he's very... he gets stuff right, basically, and he says that Carvajal's effectively a dead man walking, and the wheels are turning now to try and find a replacement. But if you look at the squad, it's a very old squad. You look at, you know, Pudel's 32, Leuven's 34, David Jones 33, George Boyd 32, Kieran Westwood 33, Fletcher 30, Wallace 32. There's a massive overhaul needed, and you'd think if Carvajal was the man to do that, he would have done so in the summer. And the fact that he didn't, and he even brought in players like Boyd, who are already, you know, basically past it or getting there.
He's gambled on experience to get them up, really. That was the big aim. And, you know, when they're struggling in mid-table. If you look at all the managers that are available at the moment, though, Pulis, he's the man to get the most out of an ageing squad like that, isn't he? So, you know, would they be able to attract him? I don't know.
Well, a lot of people forget how big a club Sheffield Wednesday are. The crowds they get now are very, very good. The crowds they get in the Premier League would be absolutely enormous. I mean, there's a fair chance they'll be aiming for someone with a bigger name, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. It's always, as a fan of a League One club, maybe I champion these young League One, League Two managers more than the people who have to foot the bill if it doesn't go well. But as I mentioned on basically every single Not the Top 20 pod, there's a man called Michael Appleton, who I think would do a very good job at any of these clubs as well, who managed Oxford and completely revolutionised the club as manager in 3 years. And with Claude Puel bringing his own men into Leicester, I wouldn't be surprised if he was putting his name up for these kind of jobs as well.
Nice little audition at Leicester. Put himself in a strong position there.
Absolutely. Although I mean, what Puel's done since has maybe shown it wasn't the miracle that we thought it was. But he's, you know, he's someone who would get fans on board and play football the right way, if there's such a thing, and deserves his chance at a Championship club at least.
Okay, well, if you want to be one of the many people watching Sheffield Wednesday, tickets are around about £28 for adults, although it's £23 if you're a member of the armed forces. It's the first time we've seen that sort of discount. And tickets start at a fiver for juniors as well. Hillsborough's 2 and a bit miles from the city centre, and indeed Sheffield train station. But if you don't fancy a 12-minute walk... 12 minutes for 2.5 miles. Producer Ben, you must have legs, dynamic legs. If you don't fancy that walk, take the Sheffield Super Tram. Sounds amazing. When we come back, we'll be playing the Fan League. Listeners, you like stats, and so do I. So have a bang on this one. 81% of men who try the Cornerstone Razor don't go back to their old one. I know. Find out more and get £10 off your first order and free delivery too at cornerstone.co.uk/totally. Welcome back to the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill. You've been on the Sheffield Super Tram, Ali.
I have.
Is it super?
Fairly run-of-the-mill. I don't know trams that well, but if that's super, I'd like to know what's less than super, what's normal, because, it's a very handy tool, because it is a long walk, certainly more than 12 minutes. We walked there on the way to the game, decided not to take on the walk back, but then you have the problem of, you know, a lot of people trying to get on the super tram, and it might be super, but it's not necessarily that large, so I think we waved sort of four off before we could get on one. So if you're trying to catch the train after the game, got to bear that in mind. That's what I'm saying.
It's about 12 minutes to walk to Bramall, so maybe they're making that.
Go and watch the better Sheffield team. That would be my tip.
Right, that's our mailbag screwed. If it wasn't in enough trouble with you saying Shrewsbury earlier.
Oh, no.
The post will get.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, lads.
Let's play the Fan League. You know the Fan League by now. You download it off the App Store and you get a slip with 13 games. All you've got to do is pick a home win, a away win or a draw. Which sounds easy. We manage to screw it up almost every week. Let's start with a game that we shouldn't be able to screw up. Leeds against Hull. George, how are you feeling about this?
I think it'll be a home win. I think that Hull have obviously turned it around somewhat, but Leeds seem to be a team who, when momentum is on their side this season, they can blast teams away, and I think they'll do that here.
Ali, 10 points from a possible 12 for Leeds. They've won their last three home games. Hull lost last week. It's not going to be a shock, is it?
No, it's not. Leeds are, I think, on the threshold of being a really, really good team. I think one or two clever additions in January could take them to that next level. And with a big battle for second place at the moment, I wouldn't say they're out of it.
Matt, we've watched Leeds on the up, Leeds on the down, Leeds stabilising. What do you make of them right now?
I'm still not convinced.
Oh.
So I think Hull could snatch a draw here, actually, as well. Being a sort of local rivalry as well.
Yeah?
I think I saw Leeds against Norwich at the weekend. James Maddison missed a great chance for Norwich that could have snatched a 1-1 draw for them. So, yeah, I think a draw.
I disagree completely. I think Leeds will win. On to QPR against Bristol City. Now, the tricky bit here is that Bristol City haven't played Manchester United as we record this, and it's hard to know how they'll react, well, both to victory and defeat, really. Matt, QPR, Bristol City, is this a good time for QPR to play them?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. After the Manchester United game, I mean, they're going to put everything into that, aren't they? To get to the semi-final, hopefully, of the EFL Cup. Lee Johnson, hopefully when his snazzy coat again on the sidelines at Loftus Road at the weekend. QPR as well, we've seen them beat Sheffield United at home, they beat Wolves at home, so we know they're a big test for sides at the top end of the division. And I think, yeah, drawing this one, I think it's going to be a close game.
Ali?
I'm going to go with a home win for some of the reasons Matt just touched on there. They have turned up in bigger games this season, especially at home. And once that atmosphere starts crackling, it's a very tough place to go. There's the Man U tie in midweek for Bristol City. But also, I think some of their results have papered over a couple of cracks recently. They've not been dominating teams. They've been sneaking wins. And I think ultimately that'll start to even itself out starting this weekend.
George, QPR won last week, but before that, they hadn't won in six. Is Ali drunk?
No, I think the QPR are actually better than maybe the table suggests. I do think the Bristol City, they were very, very good, and they'll finish in the top six at least this season. I'm going for a draw purely because, irrespective of the result against United, that's inevitably going to take a fair bit out of them. But I do think they're the better team.
I shall join you with the fence up my bottom and say draw as well. Sheffield Wednesday against Middlesbrough. We just talked about Sheffield Wednesday. But Middlesbrough, they've lost four of their last six, George. Why aren't they winning?
I don't think they're very good. to put it bluntly, I think that we've seen at Swansea, at Leeds and at Middlesbrough that Gary Monk is a massive momentum manager. Absolutely huge. We saw the wheels totally fall off at Leeds last season, and we saw an amazing run to get them in the position they were in the first place. And at the moment, Borough are down and out. But as I've mentioned, Sheffield Wednesday are the team you want to face. They've drawn four of their last six games, and I think this is going to be another share of the spoils.
You've got Pep Clote at Oxford, yep. Gary Monk's former number two. You only have to watch Oxford for about 3 minutes to go, ooh, what's yeah. going on here? Is that what Gary Monk's missing?
Possibly. Pep is obviously a very good coach. He has an idea of how we want to play. It's kind of bizarre though, because we go through this phase of the season. At the moment, we haven't conceded in two games, and we were shipping goals for fun about a month ago. So I think it's slightly scattergun. It's a bit slapdash. He's a young, inexperienced manager, but the style of football we play when going well, with a player that you must know quite well in Jack Payne at the forefront, can be fairly sublime. But I think stop Payne, stop Oxford, sadly.
Mini Messi. We banged on about that too much, so I'm going to quickly run through. So you're saying Borough for the
draw,
win there?
Draw.
Yeah. Ali?
Yeah, draw for me as well.
Matt?
Yeah, draw.
I'm going Middlesbrough win. Wolves Ipswich. Matt, the last time we had a Wolves prediction, it didn't go well because it was Sunderland, but Wolves Ipswich.
Yeah, well, it has to be Wolves, really, doesn't it? But Mick McCarthy going back to Molyneux, you know, it could be a surprise result. And Ipswich beat Derby on this fantastic run that they're on at the moment, winning at Pride Park. So, yeah, I'm still going to go for Wolves.
Ali?
But I thought you possibly would think, oh, a Mick McCarthy team, they'll set up really defensively and they might frustrate Wolves into a draw. But actually, Ipswich are a very open team, this iteration of Ipswich anyway, which sort of goes against the last few years. But I think McCarthy just went, sod it, let's put a load of attacking players and try and excite the fans. And they are, but their defences are not very good, and I'm sure Wolves will find a few ways through it.
George?
Yeah, I was thinking about going for a draw. I think Wolves will win it purely because Mick McCarthy's a specialist at focusing on games where he thinks he can pick points up. And with QPR coming on Boxing Day, I think that'll be the forefront of his mind even for Saturday.
I'm going to be talking to Mick McCarthy on Thursday, and on the off chance he's listening, I'm going to say draw. because I am that cowardly. Final one on the slip. We'll have to be quick because we're running out of time. Aston Villa against Sheffield United. Villa beaten by Derby, George, which is a bit of a blow because, you know, you can take being beaten by Wolves, I think, but being beaten by Derby, that marks them out as maybe not the playoff contenders we thought they were.
And, they had one shot. I think in the whole game. So they're suffering from a crisis of confidence. Having said that, Sheffield United are in the same boat. Although I think that the loss against Bristol City, even with 10 men, was fairly unfair. And we can probably see a return to form at some stage. So I am going to go for a draw.
Yeah, I said this last week about Sheffield United. And look what they went and did. They lost to Preston. Ali, Villa, Sheffield United.
I'm going to go with Sheffield United here. I think that Villa's thin squad at the moment due to injuries is starting to become an issue. Keenan Davis and Josh Onuma are just simply too young and too inexperienced to be leading that line. And with Grealish coming back into fitness, that will be a boost for them over the Christmas period. But I think they struggle against well-drilled teams with a bit about them attacking in an attacking sense. And that's Sheffield United. So I can see Sheffield United getting back on the wagon.
Matt, equally confident?
Sheffield United victory, definitely.
Okay. I will go draw. There you go, just to avoid controversy. Fan League is available on the App Store. Type in Fan League. And if you want to join our league, the Totally Football League, just seek me out, Ian McIntosh, and send me an invite. And as soon as I can figure out what my password is, I will invite you to join. After this, it's time for League One. League One, then. After three games without a win, Shrewsbury are back. They beat Blackpool 1-0. They're second, and they're 4 points behind leaders Wigan. That little wobble has closed the gap behind them, though. Bradford are fourth after yet another away win, this time at Southend, thanks to a last-minute penalty from Charlie Wyke. And it might be worth keeping an eye on Portsmouth. Kenny Jackett's side beat Bury 1-0, and that's their fifth win in six games. They're seventh.
Wigan continue to lead the way in League One after thrashing Wimbledon 4-0 at King's Meadow. But Blackburn are now only a point behind the top two as they picked up a sixth win in a row against Charlton. And Oldham battled back to draw 1-1 at Doncaster thanks to Owen Doyle's late leveller.
Scunthorpe have lost a little ground on their rivals this week, dropping 2 points at home with a 2-2 draw against MK Dons. Rotherham are losing their way as well. They needed a last-minute equaliser to salvage a draw at home to relegation-haunted Plymouth. And if Pep Clotet's Oxford could get a bit of consistency, they'd be dangerous. Instead, they're ninth after drawing 0-0 away at Rochdale.
Gillingham picked up a first home league win since September, and they did it in some style, thrashing Bristol Rovers 4-1, while Northampton gifted Walsall an early lead at Sixfields, before Chris Long claimed the brace to win a vital 3 points for Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's side. And Peterborough left it late to fight back and beat Fleetwood 3-2 and climb to 8th.
Ah, Blackburn Rovers, then. What an absolute minefield this is. I wrote this at about 1 in the morning, and thought, right, the first thing I do when I wake up is I'm going to legal check this because there are periods of Blackburn's recent history which are a little iffy. So what I'm going to have to do is kind of legal check it as we go. And I think that's fine. I think that's good practice.
Are you a bit more fast and loose at 1 in the morning, Ian, than you are at in the morning?
Yeah. You know, I've got the drinks globe, so that kind of gets me through. So some of this might go a little odd. But left to my own devices, a history would take about 20 minutes. There's so much going on. So I'm just going to split this up into three ages. The Age of Victoria, and Edward VII and George V. Blackburn Rovers were one of the powerhouses of the Victorian era. They were formed in 1875. They won their first of three consecutive FA Cups in 1884, beating Scotland's Queen's Park twice and West Bromwich Albion once. They got a silver shield to mark the occasion. They were founder members of the Football League in 1888, making them one of only three clubs to be founder members of both that and the Premier League. Gentlemen, there are points on offer if you can guess them.
Well, it's got to be Aston Villa, one of them.
Shameless Matt Stanger and steals Everton. In with Aston Villa and Everton for Ali as well. Everton, Aston Villa, Blackburn, the only two founder members of both the Football League and the Premier League. Blackburn won two more FA Cups in 1890 and 1891, two league titles in 1912 and 1913, another FA Cup in 1928. After that, it all goes a bit quiet. They did reach the final in 1960, but they lost. I don't know if you know, Matt, but Dave Whelan broke his leg in that
the
game.
The dustbin final, that was called.
Why was it called the dustbin final?
Because there was loads of litter flying across the Wembley pitch.
Oh, very nice. Nice addition. The Age of Walker. In 1990, after much pinging between the divisions, local boy-made steel magnate Jack Walker took over, and things started looking up. Kenny Dalglish arrived in 1991. Rovers went up through the playoffs in 92 and announced their return to the big time by buying Alan Shearer for £3.5 million. For younger listeners, this is a bit like Sheffield Wednesday going up and immediately spending £100 million on Harry Kane. Well, Blackburn came fourth in the first season, then second, and then they won the title in 95, despite losing to Liverpool on the last day of the season. Dalglish moved upstairs that summer. His assistant, Ray Harford, couldn't repeat the success. Roy Hodgson got sixth in 98, but was sacked with Rovers in the drop zone the following winter. Brian Kidd had a crack, but just 4 years after winning the title, Rovers were relegated, and Walker died 1 year before they returned. The Age of Venkies. Everything was fine. Blackburn did return to the top flight. They won a League Cup. They had a few decent finishes. And then the Walker Trust sold the club to the Indian company VH Group, better known as Venkies. And it was clear almost immediately that something was horribly wrong. Venkies were advised by the agent Jerome Anderson. Redacted. 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 Blackburn were relegated in 2012, 1 year later than everyone thought they'd go down. They lasted four seasons in the second flight before they dropped down again last season. Tony Mowbray, though, was appointed in February. He was Venky's seventh manager in 7 years. But, Matt, he might just have stopped the rot.
Yeah, we're playing really well. Best run in 17 years with a six-game winning streak. I think I probably saw the worst of that run at the weekend against Charlton, where it looked like we didn't have a great deal left in the tank, to be honest, which is a bit worrying ahead of the Christmas schedule. But we ground out the win, and Mowbray was very pragmatic about it afterwards. He said it's one of those games where you go in, you get the 3 points, and you get out and you move on.
Nice. That's what we want. Ali, obviously I've skirted over a few details there that I might not have done if I was just a guest on a show, but, you know, kind of owning the company and stuff, I'm a bit scared of lawyers. Suffice to say, it hasn't been a great period in their illustrious history.
No, definitely not. You're not going to catch me out either by making me say anything that I may later regret. No, it's been a terrible period in the club's famous and storied history, and it's horrible to watch fans see a club struggle like that for one very obvious reason, and seemingly with no upcoming potential for that to come to an end, despite some good times on the pitch this season.
George, it's been horrifying watching them slide down, hasn't it? But do you think they've hit rock bottom now?
Yeah, I mean, I was one of those guys growing up who was a Blackburn fan for about 6 months before I realised I had a local club because of Alan Shearer, because I, you know, I was whatever, 5 years old when they won the league.
And Stuart Ripley.
And Stuart Ripley, you know, all the lads, Sutton. Great times. But yeah, I think that every club, and, you know, to bring it back to my own experience, every club, I think, has a level where no matter who you're run by, no matter who your owner is, you're going to be too big a fish. And Oxford and Luton had it when they went down to the conference, what's now the National League. And I think that's what's happened with Blackburn. I think the size of the club, the fan base and the way it's built and the history means that there's going to be a level where it can't go worse. And I think that things would have to be seriously bad at Blackburn for them to be not competitive at League One level. And having Tony Mowbray in charge, who's someone who's very shrewd and very clever, pragmatic, as Matt said, has been a huge plus for them. And I think that the turnaround, the recruitment in the summer was very, very smart. I'm sure we'll talk about Bradley Dack more, who's having a fantastic season. Richie Smallwood as well is someone who I think has gone under the radar somewhat in terms of a signing. They're back on the up now. But the real question will be if and when they do go up, can under this ownership and under Tony Mowbray, can they keep going back towards where they probably think they deserve to be, and that's the Premier League.
Matt, one of the saddest things about a trip to Ewood Park, aside from being threatened to be shot by a six-year-old, is that when you're heading towards Ewood Park itself, almost everything in the area has shut down, hasn't it? Because you had all these pubs and restaurants and that had a huge influx of people every fortnight, and that has drained away, and the area around it, it's not done well out of this.
Yeah, this is something I wrote about last year, actually, when I went to watch us play Leeds. We lost, I think it's Pontus Janssen, late goal in the relegation mile last season, and it's not just, you know, the team and the club and the fans, it is the local businesses as well, and the whole area, really. And if you think about it, it was 10 years ago we finished seventh in the Premier League, and we've just plummeted. So, yeah, it's been a terrible time for the town.
But tell me about the team right now. Who are the players that that we've just mentioned now?
Oh, thank God, we can focus on something positive. Well, George said Bradley Dack, and he's been tremendous since he came in from Gillingham. We've got a really attacking side. We've got the trio of Antonsen, who we've got on loan from Leeds. There's a chance he could get recalled in January, but I think Leeds are going to be kind and allow us to keep him for the rest of the campaign. And we've got Dominic Samuel as well, who Mowbray has worked with previously at Coventry. And then we've got experience on the bench of Danny Graham and a young striker, Joe Nuttall, who's done really well in the youth teams this season. He only joined us from Aberdeen in the summer, but he looks an exciting prospect already and set up Graham's second goal at the
weekend. He's got a great hashtag, doesn't he? Feed the nut. Yeah, and he will score. Nut. Like feed the yak, but with Nuttall.
I don't know, just feed nuts.
Yeah, I've never. I mean, you can cultivate them. I'd imagine.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, eat them.
Either way, he still scores.
He does score, and he's done really well since coming into the side. But I still think that the experienced players are the ones that are going to be the players to carry us through really in this promotion run, because we've got Charlie Mulgrew, who is having a tremendous season. I think he's scored 8 goals already as a centre half. We've got Elliot Bennett and we have Craig Conway. And Craig Conway, for me, when I was watching the Charlton game, he was still the best player on the pitch because he's got so much experience at championship level with Cardiff before us. And yeah, he's someone that will hopefully help us drive back up into the championship.
George, Tony Mowbray had a reputation at West Brom and Middlesbrough for perhaps the football was a bit too nice, a bit too ideologically driven. Is that the case with Blackburn?
I don't think so. I think when it's ending and hitting the back of the net, then it's all hunky-dory, really. I went to Blackburn, beat us a couple of weeks ago, and they were very impressive. They were 3-0 up after 15 minutes and then just managed the game very well. It was one of those games where you came away from it as a home fan, as a fan of the team who lost, thinking, oh, we were kind of in that. And then you actually thought about it and there was a lot of possession and just not many chances. And I think that ability to see games out now is impressive for Mowbray.
Yeah, I went to the defeat against Oldham early in the season and we honestly didn't look like we knew how to win a game. It was, yeah. You know, we made a pretty slow start. We lost at home to Doncaster. We lost at Southend on the opening day.
Did you?
And yeah, and it looked like things weren't going to click. And, you know, the fans were very worried, but it's the counter-attacking, really. That's our biggest strength. And that's what we showed against Oxford. Yeah. It's what we showed away against Peterborough the other week. And, you know, it's sort of how we tried to play against Charlton as well. And I actually thought, even though Charlton had us pinned back and we only had 40% possession throughout the whole game, I thought we might even go on and get a couple more because that's how we play.
Ali?
I noticed something that I wanted to ask Matt about. Paul Downing, centre-back on loan from MK Dons, previously at Walsall, never been particularly well-fancied, even at League One level, but he is the key to it all. In my research, I found out that he's played 12 games, so he's missed quite a few. In the 12 that he's played, they've won 10 and drawn 2, so unbeaten when Paul Downing plays. 7 clean sheets in those 12 games, which is... The fans of his former clubs are absolutely baffled about it. Is that just a statistical anomaly, or is he looking fantastic?
He looks really solid, you know, and I think he compliments Charlie Mulgrew well. And when you've got a player of Mulgrew's experience alongside him, I think he probably, you know, coaches him a little bit on the pitch, gives him a few words, and Downing's done brilliantly.
How do you feel about all this, Matt? Are you sounded really enthusiastic there and emboldened. Is this the best it's been to be a Blackburn fan in recent years?
Ever.
I mean, you may have had some high points in the 90s, but...
I think we've just got to enjoy it now, you know. I mean, I stayed away for a long time with a lot of other fans that protested against Venky's and just kind of realised that until they can get their money back, which is probably never going to happen, like there isn't a great deal that we can do. And to be honest, as a football fan, I look at it quite philosophically and think, I've been incredibly lucky in my lifetime because I saw us win the Premier League and there's not many football fans that can say that. I saw us win the League Cup. I saw us go down and come back up again. So really, you know, we've been spoilt so far in my lifetime. But I think this season, it is exciting to see us at the top end of the division again because we were circling the drain in the Championship for a long time. One of my greatest... One of the stats that I enjoy most about Blackburn's period in Championship is we had Jordan Rhodes at front. He scored over 20 goals 3 seasons in a row for us and we didn't even make the playoffs. I mean, how does that happen?
Is there any way that you can see, you know, revolution, the Venky's leaving? Is there any indicator that anyone would come in and buy?
Yeah, yesterday actually was indication that things are moving in the right direction. Not necessarily a buyer, but we hired a new CEO, Steve Waggett. We actually poached him from Southend, I believe. And that's the much needed structure off the field that we haven't really had in the last few years. And just to see like things like that happening is a massive boost really for the fans, because he worked with Mowbray at Coventry before as well. So Mowbray's clearly impress the owners. He's winning his power struggle there, and he's helping not only build a great football team, but also structure off the pitch. And also we've tied a few young players to longer term contracts this season, which really needed to happen, because we had a player last season, a local lad actually, Conor Mahoney. Brilliant talent. He left for peanuts in the summer to Bournemouth. He hasn't even played a game there. I mean, we haven't even tried getting him back on loan, which is a shame, really, because I remember watching him quite a few times last year, but there was one moment that stood out. We played Manchester United in the FA Cup. We lost that match, but Conor Mahoney put Paul Pogba on his backside.
You know, seeing Matt talking about Blackburn so passionately, having obviously stayed away, I think it's something we see quite a lot in the EFL, that actually relegation can often be the best thing for a fan. You see it time and time again, where you go down and you're devastated. You think, and then it's followed up by this like amazing season, because you're winning games. And actually, finishing mid-table in the Championship for three seasons, or going for promotion in League One, lots of new grounds. I mean, what's better? Obviously, the second one.
Southend never seem to do it like that. Southend just seem to go down and just sort of whimper for about 3 years.
I think there is a big realigning of expectations as well, and that does take a little bit of time, because, you know, say at the weekend when I was watching us, I was thinking, we're just about completing 10-yard passes here, and we used to have two guys pinging it across the pitch, so...
All right, I feel like we could talk about that all day, but we can't, because studios are expensive. Blackburn Rovers, then. Tickets range from 20 to 27 quid for adults, depending on where you sit. It's £5 for under 12s and £7 for under 17s, which is very good. There are four car parks around Ewood Park. Matchday parking's a tenner, and if you're taking the train, Blackburn Station is about a mile and a half from the stadium. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to League Two. League Two, then. Luton Town have opened up a 2-point lead at the top of the fourth division. They were reduced to 10 men away at Forest Green, but it didn't stop them winning 2-0. Notts County are second. They were held to a goalless draw at home to Grimsby. "I don't think we were really at it," said manager Kevin Nolan afterwards. He's not wrong. Wickham Wanderers are fourth now. They beat Jack Leicester's briefly revived Chesterfield 1-0, and they plunged the Spirites back into the drop zone.
Jamal Campbell-Rice scored a beauty for Barnet in their big 2-1 win over Morecambe, while Totally Football League Show favourite Giovanni Brown also scored a cracker for Cambridge, but Sean Derry's side went down 2-1 at home to Newport. And a Clint Hill-assisted opener for Port Vale set the Valiants on the way to a 2-1 win over Carlisle.
Can Lincoln City secure back-to-back promotions? You wouldn't want to bet against the Cowley brothers, especially after their 2-0 victory over rivals Accrington Stanley. Mansfield Town was supposed to be promotion contenders, but they dropped two big points at home to struggling Yeovil. They're stuck in 10th. And we didn't expect to see Colchester pushing for promotion, but there they are. They beat Swindon 3-2 away from home, and they're only out of the playoffs on goal difference.
Mark McNulty popped it with his fourth goal in five matches to secure 3 points for Coventry against Cheltenham. While Crewe won a game, only their second in eight League Two outings, strolling past Harry Kewell's Crawley Town, TM, 3-0. And Exeter picked up just their third win in 10 league games to beat Stevenage 2-1 and sneak into the automatic promotion spots.
All right, Crewe Alexandra. Points on offer again, if you can tell me where the Alexandra bit comes from. No, a lot of blank faces.
I should know this. This is my granddad's team, so...
It's a respectful nod to the then Princess of Wales, Alexandra of Denmark, who, as I'm sure you'll already know, was the Queen of the United Kingdom and her dominions between 1901 and 1910.
And a massive Crewe fan.
Well, I'm afraid I did look. I looked really hard, using lots of combinations of Google keywords, but I was unable to ascertain her feelings on that front. Crewe were formed in 1877. Their first FA Cup match was certainly noteworthy. They played Queen's Park in 1883, these being the days when that sort of thing happened, and they lost 10-0. But that was not the last thrashing of their history. Crewe were founder members of Division 2 in 1892, but they only lasted four seasons before they failed in a bid for re-election and dropped back out again. They returned in 1921 as part of the Division 3 club, Division 3 North in their case. In 1960, a record crowd of 20,000 people turned up at Gresty Road to see them take on Bill Nicholson's Tottenham, and they were rewarded with a magnificent performance and a 2-2 draw. The replay did not go well. Crewe were beaten 13-2 at White Hart Lane. They had better luck next year, though. They knocked Jimmy Greaves' Chelsea out in the third round. You never guess who they got in the fourth round, Matt.
Was it Tottenham?
It was Tottenham. It went much better this time. They only lost 5-1. They secured their first ever promotion in 1963, but it wasn't until 1983 when they started to make waves. That was when Italian-born manager Dario Gradi took over, and he began to focus his efforts on developing players from the Northwest, players who'd been overlooked by bigger teams. David Platt made his name there, as did Robbie Savage, Neil Lennon, Danny Murphy and Nicky Maynard. In 1997, Crewe reached the second flight for the first time ever and finished 11th, which remains their best ever season. They actually stayed up for 5 years, slipping down on goal difference in 2002, bouncing straight back up again and hanging on until 2006. In 2007, Gradi moved upstairs. In 2009, Crewe moved downstairs, dropping to the basement for the first time in 15 years. Gradi came back twice, once as a caretaker, once for a two-year spell, but he stepped down for good in 2011, and in 2012, under his former assistant Steve Davis, they won promotion through the playoffs, beating Southend in the process, and the following year they beat Southend in the Johnston Paints Trophy as well, so thank you for that, Crewe. After a series of near misses, however, they dropped back down into the basement in 2016. Davis was replaced by David Artell, but he hasn't yet turned it around. Now, we should say, of course, there is a huge shadow hanging over Crewe's legacy, and indeed Dario Gradi himself, who is suspended by the Football Association. I don't think that we could do justice to that story. Daniel Taylor, on the other hand, has done rightly. He's won all the journalism awards going this year for his coverage of what's happened there in The Guardian and Observer. So do make sure you read up on that. It's an extraordinary, deeply harrowing story. We're going to focus, however, on the football. Is there still a space for a team like Crewe? Historically, the breeding ground of players. Can that still happen after ETPP?
Yeah, I believe so. I think that they're, in their own way, still doing fantastic things on that front. There's a bloke called Mark Crane who has a talented son, a young son, and he's trying to work out which academy he should be aiming for. This was last year, and he couldn't find any real information or research into which academies in the UK were actually doing the best for their graduates and for the people involved. So he obviously took some time off work and put together a proper academic research paper on it. And it's fascinating reading. Crewe are one of three teams in League Two with a Category Two academy. That's Coventry and Colchester, the other two. And, you know, they're still doing it. In the top five tiers of English football last season, there were 36 youth graduates from Crewe's academy playing in the top five tiers. That's more than Manchester City, more than Aston Villa, more than Newcastle. They're obviously playing at a lower level now, but six of their first team players have come through the academy. They're getting the sort of game time that they wouldn't get elsewhere. And I just think in their own way, and perhaps on a slightly smaller scale, at a slightly lower level, they're still a club who are doing something very, very impressive.
All right, numbers like that, you can come again. George, who are we looking at in the Crewe side as the kind of the next generation of players to keep an eye on?
Well, I mean, that's probably the difficulty, I would say, is that whilst there are six academy players, it doesn't look like they've got the talent coming through that necessarily they had in the past that would take them forward and they'd be able to sell on and therefore reinvest. I think that Artell is an interesting character himself. He came in the back end of last season when they were in danger of relegation and did turn it around initially. He's an interesting guy. He's got degrees in forensic biology. He's got a forensic and analytical science degree at Sheffield Hallam University. And some of his quotes are kind of an interesting insight into the psyche of Artell. Last season, when they were threatened with relegation, he got the job. He said, "Relegation means oblivion. They'll end up in the conference on £200 a week with a job as a milkman," which seemed to get the reaction he wanted. And then at the end of the season, he offered some players new contracts and then withdrew the offers when they didn't sign them immediately. And when asked about that, he said, "We all had a say. It's not a dictatorship. I'm not Idi Amin or Pol Pot. It's evolution, not revolution, but we won't be happy with 17th in the table again next season." Well, now they're 19th. So he's obviously a manager who's very intelligent and looks to use the press and his knowledge of intellectual subjects to try and inspire his team. But I think you touched upon it, which of this squad are the players coming through who who they can rely on, and there aren't many, and there are experienced players in the likes of Chris Dagnall, who scored 2 goals on the weekend, having not scored for a while, who should really at that level at 31 years old be far scoring far more goals than he is after a brief stint at Kerala, I think he was beforehand.
I think you've got to mention George Cooper in this conversation. He's probably the brightest young thing that they have. 15 assists already this season, which is astonishing numbers, slightly boosted by excellent set-piece delivery, which is, of course, very valuable down at that level. But he is on and off. He's very inconsistent, and that comes with youth, but certainly getting better. He plays with his socks rolled down and his head up, and he's a quality player to watch on his day. Ainley, another midfielder with some quality. That their issue is they don't get any goals from midfield. Cooper might have a lot of assists, but there's no goal scorer helping out those strikers like Dagnall. Just one this season for Cooper, one from Ainley, and that's it for midfield. And I'm not sure Artel's got that much to work with, to be honest.
And Cooper's contract is out in the summer, which is symptomatic of a team who aren't run quite the way they were before, because in the past here they've been the player they'd look to sell for, you know, £500,000 up to the Championship or whatever, which they could then reinvest, whereas it looks like he's probably going to leave either on the cheap in January or for free.
I think that's the challenge for Crewe now, isn't it? Going back to what Ian was saying about EPPP, it's when they had those players like Seth Johnson, Dean Ashton, Danny Murphy, I think they sold each of those for around £3 million.
Yeah.
And now they're scrapping to tie players on permanent contracts.
And the real problem, of course, is that players get scouted and poached while they're still playing for, you know, under 14, under 15 sides, and then you get signed up for some pretty measly pay-ons. Whereas in the past, as you say, you might get 40 or 50 games out of them before they got poached. But that's another story, and that will probably require another pod and an awful lot of the beep machine. Crewe are 19th, but only because they actually won a game. They've had some pretty barren runs this season. They did beat Harry Kewell's Crawley, though. What do we think of that?
Yeah, I thought they did well. I mean, they definitely deserved that victory. But if they played some decent football at times throughout the season, really. Like Ali said, when George Cooper's on it, he really makes them tick. It was 2 set pieces, 2 assists for him at the weekend again. A great strike from Callum Ainley as well. I think he said after the game he's been targeting more goals. He knows he needs to get more goals from midfield. He actually got a terrible cut above his eye against Blackburn in midweek. We played him in FA Cup replay, but clearly he recovered in time for that stunning opener at the weekend. But yeah, I've seen him a few times this season. I remember watching him against Forest Green, actually, when they lost 3-2. And I think there was a 20-pass move in the build-up for Crewe's second goal in that match. And that sort of underlines, you know, along with the 2-0 win against Notts County earlier in the campaign, that they do have some quality. They just need to bring it out more consistently.
OK, if you want to go see Crewe, tickets start at £20 for adults, £6 for under-11s. And if the following doesn't put you off, you might want to drive. Take Junction 16 off the M6 and look for the industrial estate on Western Road for a parking space. Or you can get the train. Crewe train station, 5-minute walk for Gresty Road. Nice and easy. You're listening to the Totally Football League show in association with William Hill. And we're joined by Joe Crilly of William Hill. How are you, Joe?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent stuff. Unlucky at the weekend. That's not the game you want to lose, is it?
No, not at all. I was actually quietly confident. I go into every single game of Bolton Wanderers season with a certain level of trepidation, but actually for once I was quite confident that we would get a result, and my father was actually at the game and he called me at half time and said that it was terrible. Now, looking at the stats, you would think that that Bolton dominated the game, but both teams shared 4 shots on target, and by all accounts, Burton had the better of those clear-cut chances. So I think a defeat was very much a fair result.
You were so optimistic when we spoke last because it was all looking good, but now Sunderland have started to win. Burton have moved above you. Are you starting to, you know, get the fear again?
I am indeed. All I can say is thanks to Steve Cottrell and Birmingham for keeping us off the bottom of the table.
All right, let's have a look at some of the things we've discussed today. Next Championship manager for the Chop, Sheffield Wednesday, isn't it?
It is indeed. Carlos Carvajal is 6-4 favourite ahead of the aforementioned Steve Cottrell.
Really?
And Gary Monk and Ian Holloway.
Steve Cottrell's second next favourite to get sacked?
Yeah.
Already?
Yeah, very much. A club in crisis at the moment, Birmingham. I know it's been talked and talked and talked about, but the decision to sack Gary Rowett last season continues to bite the owners of Birmingham on the backside.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better with hindsight, does it? Blackburn Rovers, though, great run of form at the moment. Matt's never looked so animated and happy with life. Can they actually win the title?
Well, yeah.
I mean, yes, technically they can. There's well, more yeah. than enough games left.
Yeah, and they're not many points off the top. I'm actually quite happy with this run that they're going on as well. And not wanting to sound like I'm after time in here, but I did back Blackburn at the start of the season to win the league. They were an incredibly short price at 5-2 to win the league. They then drifted after the really poor start that they had this season, but they're again 5-2 to win League One. So that makes them second favourites behind Wigan.
What about getting back in the Premier League, say by 2020?
Well, I mean, it's very optimistic, but not totally unrealistic. And they're actually 20-1 to get themselves back into the Premier League by the start of the 2020-2021 season.
All right. And Crewe actually staying up? Because I've got a feeling they're going down this year.
Well, it's so incredibly close at the bottom of League Two at the moment that Crewe are actually odds on at 2-9 to stay up. They're 3-1 for relegation. But if you look at the prices of all of the teams that are there or thereabouts at the bottom of the table, Chesterfield, Morecambe and Yeovil are the favourites, all at 2-1. Forest Green just a half a point or a quarter of a point behind at 9-4. And then it's Barnet and Crewe at 3-1. So all very condensed in the betting there.
Now, TV games. Villa Sheffield United. I'm torn about this one. It's either going to be one of the best games that we've seen all season or it's going to be 0-0, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this was one of the ones that you guys discussed earlier with the Fan League, and two of you, I believe, went for a draw.
Yep.
Two of you went for an away victory. So, I mean, if we're looking at that, the draw price is 12-5, the away price is 13-5, and the home victory is just a shade above evens at 21-20, but nobody really fancied Villa, so I'd be swerving that.
Right, if we're looking for a Christmas miracle, Boxing Day brings us Burton against Leeds. The miracle being, obviously, Burton beating Leeds. What's that?
Well, obviously, these prices could fluctuate, given that there is a match beforehand. But Burton 3-1, so quite a long price at home. The away side, Leeds 19-20 in the draw, 12-5.
All right, just about enough time for any other questions. Does any of the panel have an interesting story about Dele Adebola? Matt?
Interesting is perhaps a bit far-fetched. I've got a short story about Dele Adebola. Once he gave me a Mars bar on Boxing Day at Gresty Road when I went to watch Crewe versus Chester with my granddad. And actually, you asked what my lowest ebb was as a Blackburn fan, and it was definitely losing at home to Crewe in March 2000, just after we'd been relegated to Division 1. They were this tiny second team of mine that my granddad followed, and even as a 12-year-old, I looked at them with patronising eyes, and they beat us.
Jack Marshall, I think it is, says, how does everyone rate Preston's chances at a playoff place now? 6 unbeaten, 2 points off sixth, and no longer carrying 7 injured defenders. George, Preston for the playoffs?
Not for me. They've certainly improved again under Alex Neil. Ali and I were talking a month or so ago that we thought the wheels are somewhat fallen off, and I think they can now make a case for them being up there or thereabouts.
Yeah, I think they're still a bit underrated, and it's fair. He makes a fair point, the lad who's asked the question, because that poor run was almost entirely down to injuries, and when they've been fit, or fit-ish, they've been very good, so I don't see why they can't stay where they are or go upwards.
OK, Sharpie wants to know, he's a Sheffield Wednesday fan, do you let Carlos go in the summer and start again, or replace him right now? Right now, if you were owner of Sheffield Wednesday...
Now, there's nothing to lose. They're not going to go down. You don't think they're going to get dragged into it. And if they make the right appointment, they could have a playoff tilt.
Ali, I don't even need to ask you. You'd have swung the axe months ago, wouldn't you?
I would have done, Ian. But I just think he looks a bit sad. I think he needs a bit of a break. And those referees are so against him, as you know. So maybe he just needs to take a bit of time off.
Nice Christmas off. Matt, do you concur?
It's Pulis time.
Oh. Mike Booth, final question. Should Gary Monk get the sack for Christmas? That's just really, really cold, isn't it?
That is harsh, isn't it? He's only been there for 6 months.
Yeah.
But
no, I don't think so.
Ali said earlier that Sheffield Wednesday have spent £35 million over the last three transfer windows, was it, for three seasons?
Yeah.
And Middlesbrough have spent £55 million in the summer, so there is a lot of pressure on him already.
Yeah, I mean, Middlesbrough do have parachute payments, which Sheffield Wednesday don't have, so I think there's a bit of leash there in that sense. And my problem with Gary Monk, I think the fans as well, is that when they're not doing well, the way that he talks in post-match interviews and pre-match interviews, shows is this weird, almost like corporate speak, and it doesn't fly with fans when things aren't going well. They see through it, and it's not good enough for the Borough fans at the moment.
All right, that's just about all we've got time for. You've heard Ali and George unload sackfuls of knowledge here in the studio. Where can we hear your sackfuls of knowledge on a more regular basis?
So Not the Top 20 pod. You can follow us on Twitter on at NTT20pod. We're obviously on iTunes, SoundCloud, all the good places. So if you liked it, make sure you listen to both us and the Totally Football League.
You really should do as well. One of the reasons that this show is in the format it is because your show is so good. There was absolutely no point doing anything like that.
Thanks, Ian.
And we've always seen you as like news at 10 to our news night. Ah, oh, the Christmas love, the Christmas peace. Matt, thank you so much for making it here. We're very, very glad to have you healthy again.
Thanks very much.
George and Ali, thank you very, very much. Joe, where can we follow you on Twitter again?
@footy_Joe.
Lovely stuff. Thank you so much for listening to the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill. I am very much afraid that we will not see you next Tuesday because it will be Boxing Day and we'll have far more important things to do. We will next be in on Friday the 29th. Friday the 29th is our next show. Have a very happy Christmas and a wonderful new year.
The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email us at sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Summer's here, and it's time to bring the heat in a new Honda. Head out on an unforgettable adventure, or take a sporty sedan for a spin. All while driving with confidence. Check out the Civic, Accord, or HR-V during the Honda Summer Event.
See dealer for financing details.